I love to read sports books, and I came across a wonderful book called Floyd Patterson, The Fighting Life of Boxing's Invisible Champion. It's written by W.K. Stratton, and he likes to be called Kip, so I'll call you Kip as well. And I kind of smiled a little bit, Kip, when I saw this book, because I think you would have to look long and far to find a book about Floyd Patterson. Why has life in general and maybe history kind of bypassed Floyd Patterson as a great champion?
Well, you know, I think it's partially the age we live in. Floyd Patterson was a really decent, good man, and he was not a man much given to controversy. He was not much given to outrage. His life was marked by good deeds that he did, and so that sort of runs current to what a lot of people like to read about these days. So it is difficult to find a lot written about Floyd Patterson these days, and I was rather astonished by the lack of coverage, if you will, that you could find about Patterson, who was such an important figure during his time. So that's one of the primary reasons I did this book.
You once said he was among the greatest amateur boxers the U.S. has ever produced. His achievements, along with the other members of the 1952 U.S. Olympic boxing team, have been largely forgotten. And the one thing that I remember having met him only one time is how nice he was. And I think back and I reflect back on that, and I thought to myself, he was unlike most boxing champions. They may be nice out of the ring, but he was nice in the ring to a great degree. He didn't have that hard edge to him, and that surprises me, especially in a sport that's so combative.
Yes, you know, one of the most famous episodes among fans of Patterson involved a fight he had in Chicago with a fighter who's pretty well forgotten now, but during the course of the fight, the other fighter's mouthpiece was knocked out. And the other fighter just sort of fell to his knees trying to get it. Well, you know, as we know from a recent Floyd Mayweather fight, actually Patterson could have clobbered the guy at that moment. But what Patterson did is he dropped down to the mat himself and helped the guy get his mouthpiece and put it back in so they could resume the fight. That's just not the kind of behavior you see much in professional boxers, and certainly not at the world champion level. There are a number of incidents like that he did, and certainly when he knocked Ingemar Johansson out to regain the world championship, Johansson was out on the mat for a good long while, and Patterson cradled his head in his lap trying to help bring him around. So it's just unusual behavior for that kind of sport, and particularly at the championship level.
Kip, I think it's fair to say that what people are is kind of been how they've been molded is by how they grew up and where they grew up. In his case, he grew up in North Carolina, but moved then to New York and in the Bedford-Stuyvesant area. Tell me a little bit about his background to help us better understand the man.
Well, he had a really tough childhood. He was beset with what we might call psychological problems, that his family, being extremely poor and growing up at a time when there weren't a lot of social services available, there was no treatment available for him. He, as a child, was given to fits of waking up screaming and other times sleepwalking. He was reached the age of 7-8 years old and could scarcely speak, let alone read or write. He therefore had terrible times in school. He was a frequent truant. He felt a lot of guilt about the family situation because his parents worked so hard, yet the family was mired down in poverty. There were eventually 11 children in that family. So he became a thief as a child, trying to bring, you know, he would steal food to bring to the family. He would steal dresses to bring to his mother. So it was that kind of atmosphere for him. And so he ran afoul of the courts, not surprisingly. And he was sent away to a school in upstate New York called Wiltwyck in the Hudson Valley. And it really changed his whole life. He was in the company of teachers who really cared about him and counselors who helped him. And it kind of formed something in Patterson that he maintained the rest of his life, which is a willingness to help people who were less fortunate than himself. So he took that back to the city when he returned. And throughout the rest of his life, he had this sense that it was a responsibility of those who were grounded to help those who weren't. So that Wiltwyck experience really changed everything for him.
I think you know as well as I do, most people come to a fork in the road, and when you think about his easygoing demeanor and his kindness, you don't think about somebody turning and taking the fork that leads to fighting. What was the spark that sent him down that road?
Well, you know, if you look back at his childhood, he had these episodes where he would have this some kind of rage that was inside of him. It came out at one time when he got into a fight with a policeman when he was just a child, and the policeman was a grown man, but he was wailing away. And at Wiltwyck, they had an amateur boxing program, and Floyd was pretty successful in that. And it was a way that he was able to channel a lot of this frustration and anger that was inside of him. And I think that was very effective for him to get that out through that method. He never really stopped training as a boxer. You know, it's kind of a thing to say among sports writers of a certain age that Patterson never retired. He never announced that he was retiring. He just stopped boxing. But he kept training and training younger fighters at his gym near his home in New Paltz, New York. And he kept running marathons. I think it was very important for him to have some physical activity to keep that frustration and rage that he had inside of him, have a way to get it out in some physical activity.
Was he a loner because he found peace, it says, as a child in a kind of a hole near a subway station? Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was really an interesting a thing he would do. He found a hole kind of in the wall where the subway crew would store tools, and it was sort of like this man-made cave. And he found that the door was unlocked, and he could climb in there, and he would take some old newspapers with him and spread them out on the floor, and he would lock himself in this darkened hole, and he would be completely away from the world and from prying eyes on him. And now we're talking again about the pre-Wiltwyck experience. This is when he was just 7, 8, 9, early 10 years old. And that was a place where he actually found some refuge during those really traumatic years. So that was something he liked. And then, you know, throughout his professional life, he was not one of the lovable palookas who liked to hang around the press and, you know, make comments that would get in the paper and wisecrack and all of that. In fact, if you look at Muhammad Ali, he was in many ways the opposite of Ali. Ali was an extrovert who loved attention and would go out of his way to draw it toward him. And Patterson was somebody who kind of shunned it and preferred to be off in a training camp away from people and be pretty reclusive. When he did do interviews, he could be very, very expressive and speak very eloquently and was very good at probing his inner feelings and inner thoughts. But for the most part, he preferred to stay out of the limelight, so he was pretty different from the typical boxer of his time.
We only have a couple minutes before we have to break here, but also he grew up in a time in which there was not a lot of tolerance in this country socially for African Americans. How did he deal with that?
Well, you know, he was, in my opinion, he was the first major African American athlete to really start making a stand and saying that he would not fight in segregated arenas. He witnessed severe segregation as he toured Middle America as a heavyweight champion, and it appalled him, so he became very active in the civil rights movement. He became a lifetime member of the NAACP. He went to Birmingham with Martin Luther King during the height of the civil rights marches there. So he was very active in trying to overcome the Jim Crow laws that we had in effect in the 1950s and 60s in this country.
He found himself treated as an invisible man as well. At one time, he tried to get a meal in Kansas City, right?
Right. He was in Kansas City doing an exhibition tour, and he was heavyweight champion of the world. He went from restaurant to restaurant in downtown Kansas City and could not get seated, so he retreated back to his hotel. And he found another former heavyweight champion, Jersey Joe Walcott, happened to be staying in the hotel. and Jersey Joe Walcott had a bottle of milk and some cookies, and they realized that these two heavyweight champions, neither one of them could be seated for a meal in downtown Kansas City, and they retreated to one of their rooms, and they had cookies and milk for their dinner that night because they couldn't get a restaurant meal.
In about 15 seconds, did that fuel his passion as far as fighting?
Yeah, I think that was a part of the anger that he had, was the disparity in treatment for African Americans in this country at that time.
We're talking about a wonderful book that I hope that you'll check out. It's called Floyd Patterson, The Fighting Life of Boxing's Invisible Champion. And, of course, he is probably best known for not only winning a gold medal at the Olympics at the age of 21, but he also won the heavyweight championship. And he was the first boxer to reclaim the heavyweight championship after he had lost it as well. So we'll talk about that aspect of his life as we continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline.